On today's episode of The Good Word, Bomani Jones joins us to discuss everything around the NBA playoffs, the MVP race, JJ Redick, and a little bit of the Nuggets and Clippers series. All that and much more coming up right now. Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. A bit of business before we get into the show today. If you haven't already, please check out The Good Word with Goodwill on YouTube and make sure you leave us a rating and review wherever you consume this audio podcast. Today, we are joined by my man, Bomani Jones of The Right Time with Bomani Jones. You can check him out on YouTube and wherever you get your audio podcast. Bo, my man, what's going on? It's that playoff time.
Oh, man. And it's funny you mentioned that because it hadn't really settled in with me for whatever reason. It's a Monday. I woke up a little sleepier than I might be. And I'm like, oh, damn, it's about to be 2 months of this.
2 months of waking up to Charmed or NCIS.
Yeah. What come on now? What come on now in the morning on TNT? And those of y'all who don't know this, man, if you have a certain generation, you be falling asleep on the couch. And you get up and you turn the TV off and then you turn the TV back on and it's Charmed because TNT loved running Charmed.
Charmed. It used to be Smallville. It would be Law and Order sometimes, and not the good Law and Order, not the Briscoe Law and Order. It'd be like the sort of the new age 2010 Law and Order.
I feel like it was Briscoe Law and Order because TNT was early on the We Gonna Run Law and Order all the time. Situation. And let me tell you something. I wish I had ever been in an episode of Law and Order. Just one episode of Law and Order. Because I did a guest star, like a cameo more or less, but I had lines on Billions one time, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know when that runs, but here and there, I get a check, honestly, for like $15. But I get a check because that one episode has run on streaming. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
and people send it back. It's a residual check. That's what they call it. Dog. If you get on there with some Law and Order episodes, that Law and Order episode running 2-3 times a month at least across the networks.
Not just TNT, USA, TBS, Everywhere. Some of these other joints. Can you imagine being on the show with Stabler and being one of them dudes that Stabler done roughed up and then you getting $15 for it?
Yo, but they getting more than 15 because they getting more run and they getting more viewers. Like, that's what I'm telling you. Like, you were like Bobby Bonilla.
I don't think people know the meaning of the Bobby Bonilla day.
Hey, man, he got himself a nice annuity to keep on paying. Now, everybody talk about that annuity that he got, but nobody talks about the reason that the Mets were willing to give him that annuity instead of giving him that money in real time is because they were getting a higher return on their money than that annuity because they were giving their money to Bernie Madoff.
Oh, that's right. Wow, what a time. What a time. I wasn't even thinking about that. I didn't think about that part. I thought about Bobby Bowe, July 1st, every year, making sure that he got that check.
I assure you, Bobby Bonilla wish he had gave that money to Bernie Madoff.
He'd have got a lot more back on it.
He'd have got a lot more money. In fact, he could have took that money and then got his own goddamn annuity. In fact, Bobby Bonilla was real dicey because he loaned his money to the people that gave their money to Bernie Madoff. nobody seems to understand what's really going on here.
Hey, somebody hit the game rigged, and it wasn't Bobby Bonilla.
No, it was not. No, it was not. Like, you think they were doing Bobby Bonilla some kind of favor?
No. Everybody thought they was getting over. Thought that they had something on the had something that
key,
day.
Yeah, low key, Bobby Bonilla's kind of the loser in this situation.
Hey, this is all I got to show for this? It's $1 million every year?
It was dicey.
It never hit me. The connection, but it never hit me. Like, damn, Bobby Bonilla got the short end of the deal. He got played.
Yeah. He made a calculated decision, right? Like, it wasn't a bad decision. I'm just saying, it's not quite the decision that people thought it was.
It was a good decision, not the best decision.
Right. It wasn't a bad one at all, right?
Right.
He chose, He didn't know they was giving their money to Bernie Madoff. You know, like, who would have ever suspected such a thing?
And let's be honest, if you're a black man giving your money to Bernie Madoff, you best believe that ain't going to turn out well for you on that back end.
No, not necessarily. And in fact, maybe he knew they were giving their money to Bernie Madoff. He just didn't know what that meant.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Damn, we have gotten off the rails real quick.
We back.
Play-in begins tomorrow. I think it's Memphis and the Grizzlies. Golden State and the Grizzlies in a rematch of that 2021 play-in thing where Steph had that hot top fade that I'm so glad he got rid of. Remember that curly thing that he had?
That did happen.
Oh my God. He looked like Jerry Rice in 1990, like Fifi. Yes. We're gonna get to the Warriors later. Cause I wanna look at the four series that we have now, the ones that are set in stones, the 3-6, the 4-5s. Out of the ones that we have, and I'm gonna refresh Bo's memory in case he doesn't know.
Don't you worry, I got that screen in front of me. Got it? Okay, right, cool. Here. I'm ready.
What is the most intriguing or best first round series to you? I got mine. But I'm curious what yours is.
Out of the 3-6, 4-5s.
Yes.
Okay. Intriguing to me is the Pistons and the Knicks. The best one quietly might be Indiana and Milwaukee, though I'm going to be honest with everybody. I forgot about that whole Indiana thing for a while and looked up the other day and was like, damn, they're going to win 50 games. Like, remember, this did not start well.
No, it didn't.
In particular, it didn't start well from Halliburton. And I don't understand that he should have been fully rested from his time on the Olympic team. Right. And maybe that was the problem. He was a little bit rusty. He used to be out there playing pickup. And instead, he was out there going like this. With that towel.
Him and Tatum. I don't see why it's so bad. I don't know what you upset for, Mr.
He
Tatum.
He loved his role. You sit right, I'll give him that. I loved his role. He was the Thanasis of Team USA. Like, I saw it. It was there. But, and maybe I'm overestimating one man who isn't even necessarily that important too much in his role in this series, but the idea of Isaiah Stewart comes to do a playoff series at Madison Square Garden is enough to make this must-see television. On top of the fact that I think that there is room for Cade Cunningham to do a Trae Young-esque star turn by being focused, by being the guy on this stage, right? Now, look, I want to be very clear about something because I need you to know what kind of dude I am. I don't think Trae Young is anything like Cade Cunningham. Like, I think Cade Cunningham is a much better player than Trae Young is.
Yes.
So I'm not saying they're the same dude, but Trae Young is a great villain. I don't know if Cunningham is that villain, but seeing Trae Young be the villain in that building changed a lot about the way that we looked at Trae Young. And that could happen with putting Cade Cunningham in Madison Square Garden. Because, I ain't going about it like Shaq did, but I think a lot of people are unfamiliar with what the Detroit Pistons have been doing. And I think it'll be very interesting for them for people to see that.
Yeah. I mean, look, I am here in Detroit. Like, it is the team that is in my area. So I see them a lot more than most national media. I grant you that. Kay Cunningham is not the Trae Young villain. He's not the dude that fans are going to be spitting at, right?
No.
He ain't Reggie Miller. He's better. You know, like Reggie Miller kind of played up to Madison Square Garden. And so it became, the legend became better than the actual numbers. That's no shade to Reggie Miller. But the legend of Reggie Miller was made in 1994, 1995, 1998, and 2000, I believe. Like, that's where the legend of Reggie Miller was made, because of all the confrontations with the New York Knicks, which obscured the all-star appearances, the all-NBAs, or lack thereof. Cade's the all-NBA dude in what's practically year three for him. Like, there was his rookie year. He missed his second year with surgery. Only played 12 games. Last year was the disaster. And this year was like Beanie Siegel's first album. Remember Beanie's first album when he was like the first dude on Rockefeller that kind of broke off? It was like, oh, this dude is hungry. Cade Cunningham was hungry this year. And I think the Isaiah Stewart and Karl Towns matchup, Bo, will be near and dear to your heart whenever he's out there.
I would tell you this. And you and I have talked about this. He didn't quite keep it up from where he started the year, where Towns started the year truly playing MVP caliber basketball.
Yes, he did. Yes,
like,
he did.
There's, and if you guys know anything about me, he's not my type of hype. That's what we'll say, right? He was undeniably excellent for much of the season. He came back down to earth later as it went. But my belief going into the season was that Karl Anthony Towns is the wrong dude for this town with his temperament and with his style of play.
Right.
And it's actually worked out very well in a sense, because I think he's got a roster that really accepts him. Like he's a great fit for that team, and he is not expected to be that guy the way that he was in the early years of Minnesota. And there's not this like contrast between him and call it Jalen Brunson that there was between him and Anthony Edwards. Like it doesn't look the same way.
Right.
But he's going to have to be a much tougher player than he had demonstrated himself as being in Minnesota, even with that run they had in the playoffs last year, right? Even with doing a pretty good job guarding Jokic the way he did it, it ain't going to work here. Like that type of play is not going to do it. And he is matched up against, let's just say that boy is a go hard. He is a go hard. That is what he's here to do.
Make sure we note this. Isaiah Stewart comes off the bench.
Yeah, but he gonna go hard.
Yes, he is.
Right? Like that's while he's there. I mean, even if he's not starting, right? Like they got size. Okay. We're gonna see what Mitchell Robinson, like what he gives the Knicks, because it's important to have a guy that has some actual size. And Carl's gonna be playing the four as much as you possibly can to have him. So stretch the floor and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
The Pistons are gonna be coming at him. And we're going to see what he does as a result, because now, even within this city, it's going to be more people looking at him than had done so before.
It's a couple things that are intriguing to me. You're right, especially about Karl, because the Pistons played the Knicks on Friday. And that's one of those tricky games where you kind of have something on the line, but you kind of don't. So you're not going to give away the game. You're not going to give away scheme. But Isaiah Stewart guarded Karl Towns for the better part of the fourth quarter. But when I tell you his stat line read like this, 0 points, one rebound, and he fouled out. And that man got a standing ovation on his way out because he changed the game. Karl Towns could get nowhere. Like that man was his shadow. And whenever Karl tried to dribble around, Isaiah Stewart does have quick feet and long arms, so it was going to be problems. And it was problems for that man where Karl was looking to the refs every time down. And that's the thing. The other thing for me that I think is kind of tricky, and this is generally my thing.
Well, hold on. Right fast. Let me ask you a quick question before you go to this next thing.
Yep.
And I'll make sure I understand this with my recollection of how this Pistons team is put together.
Yep.
Is Tobias Harris going to be the one that they expect to guard Towns when it's not Isaiah Stewart?
No. Jalen Duren is going to start off on him.
Okay. Nice. And so what, you going to put Tobias Harris on Mitchell Robinson? Because why not?
Because why not?
Okay. That makes sense. I was going to say, because if Tobias Harris is given that assignment, Isaiah Stewart may have to play 30 minutes a game in the actual playoffs. That's not, wait a minute, buddy.
He may have to. Like that. Okay. Look, he may have to anyway, because I don't know if the Knicks are going to go double big at all, or if they're going to try, or if they're going to do it for long stretches of time. Like, for me, it's two things that stick out in this series. And this is just my playoff basketball thing. You got to have a second guy that can go and get it. Like, Cunningham is going to put up the numbers, and he's going to have the moments. Like, he had two really good games at Madison Square Garden. OG Anunoby and Mikael and Miles Bridges. I'm saying Mikael Bridges.
Mikael Bridges.
There's a big difference. They had nothing for him, right? But you got to have a second guy. Because sooner or later, they're going to scheme you out of the things that you want to do when you're playing every other day. They don't have a second guy. It's kind of a second guy by committee, but it's all kind of heliocentric around that guy.
What about the $250 million man? He ain't the second guy?
Who?
How much money has Tobias Harris made?
Oh.
in his time in the NBA? What the $273 million?
That's a lot of money.
Holy $273 million.
Yeah, he's good. Hey, he's a great vet. And he has done a great job of making sure that the young guys have space to flourish. I just don't think he's the guy that you're going to ask to give you 25.
He got another $26 million coming next year, which is to say, mm-hmm. by the time all is said and done, mm-hmm. that man will have made $300 million.
And more coming. And more coming. I respect.
Sorry. I don't mean to derail you on your own podcast. I just feel like sometimes something happens that the people need to know.
Is that the most surprising? He makes that much?
The only reason it's not is because we talked so much about it along the way.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you told somebody who just watched basketball but didn't really pay attention to the more granular aspects, the people like us are inclined to look up like career earnings and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine what they think everybody makes if they think that he's made $300 million. And you have to explain, oh, no, 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 no. That's not what this means. He is simply his own legend at the bank.
Mr. Harris. When he walks in.
And they give him the two-hand handshake where they start with the one and then they come behind it with the other. Right? They're coming in this way with the handshake. Feel the love.
Good to see you again.
Yeah, but he's still 6'10 and can shoot. Like, that's what it... If we didn't know how much money he made, we would view him much differently, right? Now, of course, mm-hmm. he's also not young. Like, he's got to be 34, 35 at this point.
Yeah.
But he in a lesser sort of way, because Carl can also go down low, but he gives you a similar thing of stretch. He's a stretch four, right? Yeah. Like a similar sort of thing as you get from him. But you're right. With Duren, they've got a big dude.
Yeah.
Right. They've got one. And that's why I'm curious to see where you ask the question of whether or not they're going to go double big. Can you ask Towns to guard Duren?
That's the question, especially if Mitchell Robinson, we're not sure exactly, you know, like where he is. Like, he's constantly hurt, constantly getting himself back in shape. And Carl is constantly in foul trouble. Right. Which has to annoy the hell out of Tom Thibodeau. Like, here's the thing that I think is going to catch the Pistons also. They're one of the most physical teams in the league, so they have to adjust to playoff officiating. Not playoff officiating in the way of, man, we get away with a lot more. Playoff officiating in the way of, man, we a young team, we ain't never been here, and we gonna get some calls called against us we not gonna understand. Like, right. That sort of playoff officiating. And I'm curious about that. And this last thing, Bo, because I want to know how you feel about this. I think this series is critical for Tom Thibodeau to win.
Win
this series.
Yeah. No. Look here. I don't care what your seed is. You get the game one and the game seven at your crib, right? You lose this, it's hot seat next year. And the reason is they've made the moves. I don't know if this is a roster that is good enough to say you should win the East.
Right.
But it is definitely good enough to say you should win in the first round no matter what happens, which is to say you either should be good enough in the regular season that you get a favorable matchup in the first round, or you should be good enough that if you don't get a favorable matchup in the first round, it's because your guys were hurt and everybody's healthy now and y'all should be able to get it done. Like, no. This is it for, like, I don't know exactly how they feel about Carl Anthony Towns, but they felt like paying him $60 million, which I believe mm-hmm. is what you have mm-hmm. to do, you know, mm-hmm. on the back end of that contract. They feel like they got that guy in Jalen Brunson, right? They got Bridges. The reason they gave up all they gave up for Bridges, it's one of the best contracts that you got in the league. And he's right. a dude that you want in the capacity that you have him in. Yeah, they think you better get this done. And then they just get, what, 30 to OG last year,
yep.
right?
Yep.
Yeah.
That's the reason why I'm not. Here's the thing. Every team has a guy that you're not sure about. And for me, it's not Carl, it's Mikal Bridges.
Yeah.
That's the guy that I'm like, I'm wondering if Tibbs is going to ask him to be able to do more than he's capable of doing. Like, we know what to expect from Carl. Carl's going to have these games where he hits six threes. And then he's going to have the game where he plays the Sheila E. Bongos in the first quarter on somebody and gets 2.5 fouls. And then you're going to say, Carl, why you do that? Carl's going to say, because that's what I do. And that's what Thibodeau has to guard against. I think it's even more critical. You saying hot seat next year. I'm saying hot seat. Nah.
Oh, you don't think that he makes it too? I feel like if you're going to fire your coach for losing in the first round, we start hearing that a lot sooner than right now, right?
Like that's true.
Case in point, I didn't pay that much attention around what happened with Memphis and Taylor Jenkins, so I don't know so much about that one. But it was not the timing of Mike Malone getting fired was a surprise. Firing Mike Malone was not a surprise. We've been hearing this all year long, right? Now, we didn't think that dad was going to say, both of you go to your rooms, which is basically, you know, what Kroenke did when he let go of Booth also. But we knew that it was tight on Malone. I don't feel like we know it's tight on Thibodeau. Like, I feel like we've done a lot of forecasting on the tightness him. So I think he comes back next year in all likelihood, unless maybe they get swept, right?
Yeah, I don't think
you get some bad post-game quotes from dudes being like, bruh, I'm tired, man. You know?
Yeah, that's a good point. Now, it's funny that you brought up the Denver Nuggets, because that's where I want to go next. Because I assume you look at the Nuggets-Clippers series as the most intriguing out West. Like, Tyronn Lue on one side, David Adelman on the other side. I think in the playoffs, coaching plays much more of a part in the playoffs than it does in the regular season, just because you got matchups, the dossier is a lot thicker and all that. One side has Nikola Jokic, one side has Kawhi Leonard, who looks like he is back to some version that ain't dragging his leg around anymore. I don't know what to make of this series.
Yeah, so I agree with you on that front. I think something worth noting about Jokic in this series is he's going to have to guard somebody, and the somebody he's going to have to guard might be a little better than he was the last time you paid attention to him, and that's that boy Zubats, who looks like he might win most improved player.
He's good.
They're going like that. You got to worry about it both. Now, granted, Zubats is going to have to guard the best player in the NBA.
Right.
But there are some who have hypothesized, I think it was Top Haver Show, who was on my pod the other day, kind of talking about this, that part of what Jokic probably didn't like about what Malone had him doing is he was playing all those minutes, and he had to play a lot of two-way basketball while also doing stuff like putting up 60-point triple-doubles in order to get it done.
Right.
A guy that does as much on offense as Jokic does for them, you hope that he doesn't have to give so much on defense. And I'm not saying that Zubats is Hakeem Olajuwon, but I am saying that he's going to have to account for him, and he's going to it looked like a long day at the office if you got to deal with him, because he's coming with you. That's a big, sturdy dude, and he's playing against you in that fashion. But on the other side, what if? This is the big what if, because I agree with you that coaching matters. And Lue, it's always so interesting to try to figure out what to take from the Clippers in the regular season, because Lue just be out there messing around, you know, just seeing what sticks, you know, throwing it against the wall. However, what if Malone had become such a wet blanket? And these are champions, right? Mm-hmm. And Adelman has been doing this for a very long time. He knows the team. If he's not the head coach in Denver next year, I think it's a good chance he'll be a head coach somewhere else, right? Yep. He was here for a championship run. What if the best player in the NBA does what the best player in the NBA is capable of doing and just goes off, right? Like, what if he the coach? How many times have we seen them on the bench where he's just like, hey, give Penn. Okay. And then he started drawing it up.
I'm not betting against him. Like, that's the crazy part about this. I think, I won't say the Lakers-Minnesota series is easier to prognosticate. I think it is. But I think the reason for this one is because there's a winner on this side. And there is a champion on this side. And I don't think he's going out like that in the first round.
No.
He's not going to win MVP. And maybe you can make the case that because his coach and GM got fired with 3 games left in the season, that that gives him a greater case to win MVP because he was keeping this together. And thus, he cannot, I won't say afford, he's not Joel Embiid. Mm-hmm. I won't say he can't afford to lose the first round series. But he probably feels more responsibility to make sure this team gets out of the first round of the playoffs yes. with everything that's going on. Who gonna check him?
Right.
And I don't just mean Zubats. I mean Kawhi. I mean Harden. And the crazy part about this is Kawhi Leonard has been playing all NBA level basketball since he's begun playing basketball
right.
here. James Harden, quietly, all NBA candidate. Not one of his better years statistically, but from the fact of James Harden being a system, holding this thing up while Kawhi is getting back, James Harden has been really, really, really good. And I don't know how to quantify that in the playoffs because we've seen James Harden's playoff movies.
We have. Here's the thing, though. To be fair to James Harden, by and large, there are some exceptions in this case, but by and large, we have seen James Harden's playoff movies with him as the leading man. If he absolutely does not have to be the leading man, can it happen? Because, and I say absolutely, I didn't use that word just to be facetious. I used that word specifically because in Philadelphia, he kind of had to be a co-leading man in a way where Embiid has never demonstrated himself to be that leading man. And to be fair to James Harden again, without Embiid, he went out there and won 2 games in that series against Boston.
He got that 50 ball when Embiid was out again in Boston. Like
he went out there and did it. There are certain games where it's just like, oh man, right? Yep. Like if you can keep yourself out of an elimination game, which of course easier said than done, then maybe it goes okay. But you have one of the greatest postseason players of all time, one of the great clutch postseason players that's ever lived in Kawhi Leonard. It's going to be very interesting to see how that goes if you're not asking as much out of James Harden, except it's silly to ask as much of Kawhi Leonard as we have seen in those previous postseasons. So, yes, you are going to need a little bit more from him, right? Like, that's a lot. I tell you this, though. I think the eyeballs go on Jamal Murray.
Ooh. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like I think right now the consensus, whether you agree with it or not, but the consensus now is that he is largely his success is a function of Jokic. At the Olympics, I think really brought that home for a lot of people to see him there. Your reminder that he has never made an all-star team, nor has anybody else that's out there with him, right? Like he's, you know, or at least not made an all-star team with Jokic.
Right.
We've seen all that. So how does that happen when it all comes together? We don't know how, like just how durable Kawhi is because the advanced numbers on Kawhi are not old Kawhi. They're not there, but he can still do stuff. He can still get shots. He's still strong as an ox. Mm-hmm. How you stop him from getting over there to the right when he wants that jumper? How you do that?
That's going to be, I mean, I guess maybe this is where Norman Powell comes in. This is where all those secondary guys for the Clippers comes in. But if Jamal Murray is not A, healthy, like when you're coming off of a hamstring, that ain't something that gets better as you continue to play basketball. That's something that gets only worse. Magic Johnson popped the hamstring. James Harden popped the hamstring, played on it in 2021, and actually played admirably. Considering the circumstances, like we just remember that from the Kevin Durant and the toe and Kyrie Irving injuring his ankle. But James Harden popped his hamstring and went out there and played and tried and gave everything he had. It wasn't enough, but he gave everything he had. I earned a measure of respect for him.
That was his chance. That was his chance to change everything that we say about him. And unfortunately, he physically couldn't do it. And what you just pointed out doesn't come up enough and should, which is he did that. Like he went out there clearly on one leg.
Yep.
Clearly on one leg.
Dragging that thing. And look, we can say whatever we want about that Brooklyn experience. If Kyrie Irving doesn't turn an ankle, they're champions.
Yep.
And we have different things to say about Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, James Harden, Steve Nash, everybody there. We have completely different things to say if Kyrie Irving does not turn his ankle. I think that was game 3 in Milwaukee, game 4 in Milwaukee. Yep. Like that, that it's just incredible how that changes. But when we come back, we know what y'all here for. Y'all want to hear about the Lakers and the damn Warriors. Welcome back to The Good Word here with Bo Monty Jones. Bo, Lakers and Warriors, if it was a first round series, I think Adam Silver would have turned into a best of nine, maybe a best of 11, you know, one of them type of things that was going to feed families for generations to come. And the world might have burnt down, or, you know, like figuratively speaking, because Steph fans and LeBron fans can't really handle themselves. But we are saved from that. Instead, we got Luka versus Ant, which is what I saw on ESPN. It says Luka versus Ant part two. And I'm like, man, did somebody forget about Julius Randle?
Oh, the answer is maybe, but no.
Or clearly, did people forget about LeBron James? Like, what do we think of the LA Lakers out of all of the muck that's in the Western Conference? You got all these teams at the doorstep of 50 wins or getting 50 wins. The Lakers comfortably got the third seed, clinching it where they could basically sit the last two games and kind of chill a little bit. What do we make of J.J. Redick as head coach? Because I didn't expect this quickly, especially with all the upheaval on the roster.
I think that he has been excellent. I don't think that there's any other way to look at this. Like, look, my buddy Howard Bryant makes this point often, and he's right. I think this has changed a little bit as the rules have changed and the game has changed. But overwhelmingly, this sport is a best player wins sport, but it really comes to best two players wins sport. Which then, like, that big three era took it to another place, but it still really came down to, like, who are your best two players? You get teams like the 2014 Spurs, the 2004 Pistons, whatever, that could democratize things a little bit, but it's really about how good the top of your roster is. Okay.
Right.
The Lakers top two, at least on offense, are as good as anybody's top two in the league that you could ask for, right? You could make some arguments about where, like, in the year 2025, where, say, Tatum and a healthy Jaylen Brown, which, by the way, is its own question, right? But you could raise a question about whether those guys are in the same sort of space as the Lakers and as the Lakers are with Luka and LeBron. But I don't think there's anybody, even those two guys that I just listed coming off championships, they got two guys that you don't mind having a ball late. They got two guys that you feel like could carry your team down the stretch. They got two guys that you feel like could hit a shot. The question is, looking at the rest of the roster, who could they guard, right?
Right.
Especially with the shortcomings they have in terms of size. Who could they guard? And JJ was like, watch me cook. And figured it out. Like, the defense got better.
Yes.
It got better, but then it got kind of, you know, it fell off toward the last couple weeks of the season, which I think becomes the question. That last 3 weeks really of the season. It's like, okay, are they going to be able to play good enough defense? But the fact that these are even discussions, right? Like, we did not think they would get better necessarily with this trade losing Anthony Davis was going to matter so much for their defense. Now, I don't know if this is an indictment on Davis as much as it is something to give Redick credit for. But no, there's been no point at this season where we have been like, oh, I don't know about the coach. That hasn't been it.
No, it hasn't. And the crazy thing is, because Bo is a devotee of win shares per 48, which he actually turned me on. I'm like, oh, shit, this is actually pretty predictive.
It speaks.
Luka Doncic is not shockingly one of those guys, even though he is very, very high usage. And it seems like he is like a floor raiser in the playoffs when you think of what he did last year. You think of what he did in 22 with that Dallas team. I almost compare him in a way both to an Allen Iverson sort of carrying the 76ers in 2001 where you're like, okay, he's the number one scoring option. Now, clearly, AI wasn't rebounding and doing all that type of stuff that Luka's doing. But just the way that everything revolves around him, the advanced stats may not necessarily quantify because you kind of see it and you feel it a little bit more with him. What do we think of not just them having two guys who can create their own shots, but two guys who can create shots for everybody else on the roster in the last 5 minutes of a game? That, I think, gives them a distinct advantage In addition to J.J. Redick being a damn good coach right now.
Well, also, and the thing that Luka can do, right? Because another guy that, like, the win shares for 48 does not speak that highly of is Kobe Bryant, for example. But what they all can do that is important, I got you tonight.
Yep.
Right? Like, I am going to win us a game right fast. Maybe we would have won it if I didn't win it, but that's not the point. I can go out here and win you a game tonight. Okay. Now, what's also going to be required is those two dudes staying healthy for the next 2 months, which is always a lot to ask of somebody 40 something years old, and to ask of Luka, who is not the most durable sort himself. Right.
Right.
Also, they're going to have to do it where I think the fair question to ask about the Lakers and their success is it 82 game success or is it 7 game success? Which is to say, when you were doing this and you're on tour, where you do this against one team and then you go do it for another audience and you go do it for another audience and you can kind of play the same shows. Okay, cool. And it gets the crowd going. But what you got to do when you got to play the same audience 7 times in a row? And some of these things that Redick is managing to cook up. So, like, what you cooked up to do with the Jokic right there. Okay, cool. If you got to look at Jokic 7 times.
That's a great point.
Right. Is that going to be it? And the question for the Lakers, and the reason why I asked that about 82 versus 7, is the structural flaw that we all agree that they have, which is outside of the boy Sideshow Bob, they don't have big men.
Nope.
Right? They're going to play against Minnesota, who doesn't have Karl Towns anymore, but they do still have Naz Reid. And look, it's easy to harp on what isn't right about Rudy, but Rudy is still an effective basketball player. He's just an easy joke.
Yes.
But they got big dudes, and Reed gives you a big dude that can also stretch things. So I don't think that this first series is as much a walk for the Lakers as I think it could appear to be for a lot of people.
It feels like the Timberwolves will beat themselves. Like when you, before you zoom in, it feels like Minnesota will beat themselves, or someone will do something that they shouldn't. And I'm not talking about Anthony Edwards.
You're talking about Julius Randle. Yes, that's who you're talking about.
Pretty much. Like, and he's someone who tries hard, who plays hard, but sometimes you just do a little too much and you commit a turnover at the wrong time, or you gum up the offense at the wrong time. And I feel like that's the type of thing that the Lakers, because you have two basketball brains on the floor in Luka and LeBron, and then a basketball brain on the sideline in J.J. Redick, that what could be a 7-game series turns to a 6-game series.
Yeah. I tell you this, though. That boy tries hard, Julius Randle, when he tries hard and when he's in a bad mood.
Eeyore.
Yeah, it's like, why are your hands on your hips, man? It's a game going on right now. Like, why are you walking right now? What is this?
It's one of those things where everything he does is loud. The turnovers are loud. The bad shots are loud. Like, whatever bad things that he does, they seem to happen at either the worst time or they're just memorable because you loaf back on defense, or it leads to a layup, or you don't get back out. Remember him and Rudy Gobert did not get along early on in the season when, you know, Rudy had that dude sealed in Toronto and Julius wasn't throwing that ball. And we understood. Excuse me.
Yes.
You understand why you don't throw Rudy the ball. But then Rudy is like, hey, man, you ain't throwing me the ball. I ain't helping you on defense. And those things are tattooed in your head to the point that we've talked so much about this series and we ain't thought about, hey, man, what is Anthony Edwards going to do now in the postseason, now that he done got a taste?
I mean, they got worse when they made that trade.
Yes.
Like, even a Carl Anthony Towns critic such as myself did not think that trade was going to make them better. I thought both sides thought they were trading the lemon off on somebody else, right? Like, they both were winking, like, on the phone on their end, thinking, that, like, got them, right? But they didn't get better. I don't think there's anybody, any way that you could reasonably look at it and, like, truly believe that they got better by making that deal. Now it's how much more mature has Edwards gotten? What is he capable of doing? Also, keeping in mind, is he not going to have to play a decent bit of defense on Luka?
Yeah.
Because last year, he dealt with Kyrie.
And like, he was exhausted.
And he was burnt. He clearly can't chase him around Kyrie all game, right? Like, he clearly can't do that. But they're going to need him to do it some, right? I think we agree there.
And the man, once again, we pointed this out early on in the season when he was taking 12 threes a night. He is the NBA's three-point leader. He made the most threes in the league this year. But taking a whopping 10.3 threes a night, that's like lower than Stephen Curry.
Yes. And look, that to me, if there's an argument against the Luka and LeBron can get shots for everybody thing, right? If there's anything that gives you like, yes, but on that, it's the fact that no matter what this era is, asking guys to take a lot of long shots in the playoffs is not the best recipe for making things happen, right? In the playoffs, 15-footer becomes an 18-footer. 18-footer becomes a three-pointer. Three-pointer might as well be from half court. It's a different brand of basketball. It's a different level of pressure. All of those things that come with it, right? And that is why it's good to have the guy that can get his own shot, because getting them for somebody else, who is this somebody else that needs you to get that shot in the first place? Anthony Edwards standing around shooting threes in this postseason is not going to get it done, because he's been pretty good at it, but he ain't that good at it.
Right.
This ain't the way to go there. And look, to be fair, I had to look up. He shot 40% from three this year.
Yes, he did. Like, yes, he did.
That's bananas. But I still don't think you think he's going to shoot 40% from three at a 10 a game clip in the postseason? Because I do not.
He's going to take more. Because, A, and the question is, will you be able to scheme him to get the ball on the move? Because he has the ball at the top a lot, which I don't think is necessarily the best use of his talent. Will you scheme to get him downhill? And if you do scheme to get him downhill, will you get Rudy and Julius out the way? Because as we just said, the Lakers don't have size at the rim, which means Ant should be feasting on Sideshow Bob, on Rudy Hachimura, on whomever there tries him. I just don't know if they're going to do it. And like you said, either way, what people have to understand about the playoffs is you're playing every other day. Even though you're sitting in the same city, it's still pretty damn taxing because you went through a regular season. Going to the basket hurts. Taking mid-range shots hurts. Taking three-pointers hurts. Everything hurt. Ain't nothing easy. So no matter what we're saying about, we don't know if this is the best use, everything is going to come with a level of pain. Going to the basket does too. So I'm very curious how Ant approaches this series in particular. Now, Bo.
Well, hold on. Right fast. Let me ask you this. Just curious.
Yeah.
How much do you think it matters? I mean, my assumption is that JJ is going to play like roster, or like they're going to get Rudy off the floor, right? Like, you can go small enough to get Rudy off the floor. But if you do get Rudy off the floor, you're bringing in Naz Reid, or you're bringing in the boy with the long name, Shay's cousin, Alexander Walker.
Yeah.
That boy Nah will lock somebody up. Like,
They got two dudes.
Right. So you put Nah and Jaden McDaniels on the floor. One of them is guarding Luka Doncic, and Anthony Edwards does not. Like, the strategy of getting Rudy off the floor is going to be interesting, because you can make an argument that what you create for Minnesota is a team that doesn't have the same rim protection, but one that has better perimeter defense and better flexibility.
And an important thing to know, our friend John Krasinski from The Athletic, the Wolves' last 19 games, last 29 games, excuse me, net rating of 7.1, 19-10, sixth in offense, ninth in defense. That is a championship level profile.
Yeah.
Usually top five in offense, top five in defense, but this gets you in the conversation, that type of sample size. So it's not quite a walkover. Now, this is where things really get interesting, because Golden State decided, hey, man, how about we just miss layups? How about we just not play Jonathan Kuminga, which I don't fully disagree with, mind you, of Steve Kerr, because it doesn't look like he necessarily fits. Jimmy Butler got banged by Kawhi Leonard late in the game. So they're playing Memphis. I think Houston on paper looks like a better matchup for them in the first round of a playoff series, given Houston's relative inexperience, given the fact that we don't think that Houston has a go-to guy as of yet, although I really like Alperen Sengun, and I'm really, really liking Amen Thompson. what are we to make of Golden State tricking off this last week? Because they could have been 4 or 5, and they wound up dropping to the play-in where you got to play an extra game and you have to travel. So how do we make the 23-8 since getting Jimmy Butler with the last week of when they had a chance to really solidify playoff positioning and now they find themselves in the play-in?
Now, let me ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand, look, you win a lot of championships, it buys you a lot of goodwill. So I'm not, I don't want to exaggerate too much here. However, it could be some Steve Kerr hot seat situation. And there's a world where that could have happened. I'm not saying that's happening now because I don't think that's what it is necessarily. But like with the ending of the Curry prime, you got Jimmy Butler, who's not young, and how some of these things went at the end of the year that could have cost them some stuff. Mm-hmm. Now, I think they feel better, like you said, going against Houston and not going against the Lakers.
If they get out, right.
My understanding is that Jimmy will be fine. Mm-hmm. That's not a thing to look out for, but we just seen Jimmy do a lot of being hurt over these years. So, you know, it's a fair question to ask. But I am somewhat amazed, not amazed, because I think you're right that the Kuminga thing, it doesn't seem to be working as this roster is constructed. But damn, you kept him and you still don't play him?
It's a weird thing because once Jimmy got there and you couldn't anticipate, I guess, getting Jimmy. Although my argument is once Jimmy was done in Miami, that was the summer. You could have started the season with Jimmy and you could have had 82 games of this. The lineups, the numbers say that Jimmy, Draymond, and Kuminga don't fit well together. I'm guessing because of the spacing, and they probably operate the same parts of the floor. And what Kuminga does, Jimmy does better, right?
Yes.
Handles the ball better, attacks the basket better, gets fouled better, all that type of stuff. And of course, defends better. I don't know how you find space on the floor. If you don't find space on the floor for him in a game 7 situation, which is what yesterday felt like against the Clippers, how do you go back to him in a playoff series or even in a game against Memphis, which is, all intents and purposes, a game 7 situation? Like, all of this feels weird to me.
And the young man is a bit temperamental.
Yes, he is.
You know, so like, this is interesting, right? Because Steph Curry is still a star player, but it's tricky to compare him to, say, 2016 Steph because he knows so much more and da-da-da and everything else. So let's throw that out the window. This isn't 2022 Steph.
Yeah.
Which I think is probably a better and more important and appropriate comparison. Is this a 2023 Jimmy Butler? I'm not sure. I was going to say a 2022 Draymond Green, but boy, that was a weird year. It's hard to know whether you want to be a 2022 Draymond Green. But I don't what this will be in sum total, because they looked really good to close out the season. But again, when somebody gets them for 7 games in a row, I don't know what exactly this looks like. I know this for the Rockets, though. Who is our man going to be hawking becomes the question.
He's going to be guarding Steph.
Yeah, I'm going to say the clamps are on the way. Now, I don't know if it's enough clamps for Steph Curry, right? I don't know if he's going to be playing him end to end, start to finish in the game, but they've got that guy. Like, the thing to remember about both of those Thompsons that's very important, they're not that young. They're supposed to be 22 years old, right? So these are rookies that came out after 1 year, but they're grown-ups.
Right. And they're crazy athletic. And they get after defending. Like, remember, Amen Thompson gave Steph the mini clamps, gave Steph his worst game of the year last Sunday, where Ime Udoka and Steph were barking coming off the floor at halftime. And Ime Udoka still remembers that hot plate that Steph delivered to him in the 2022 NBA Finals. The last time we saw Ime before we found out about Ime's habits. You know what I mean? And not Ime, as I told people before, if there's one place that Ime wants to be that's going to make a man like Ime Udoka happy, it is Houston, Texas.
Hey, nah, he built for that city. I'll tell people this story that don't know it. It was so funny. Me and you went down to Mexico for a week. Just kick it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, You a beat writer, man. Y'all be living on the phones. You know, I'm big into like present in the moment thing. I'm like, man, I hope that boy don't spend all his time on the phone while he down here in Mexico. You know what I'm saying? While we on the way, the Ime story break, and it was like, man, this ain't even work. This is fun. We was out there on the beach, hitting people up, trying to get information. We couldn't believe it.
What you see now? Remember, he's like, hey. We're playing amateur detective and all that, like getting text messages and screenshots and all that. Like that was fun.
Yeah, we at the pool looking at the scenery, getting the deets, just trying to get some info.
Oh man, what a time. Time for the last word. Quickly, Bo, where do we sit on MVP? They haven't given us our ballot yet. Because they technically have to figure out who's eligible and who isn't. The numbers in history says if you're playing on a team that's got 66, 67, 68 wins, unless your name is Karl Malone and it's 1997 and Jackie McMullen writes the Karl Malone and never win an MVP po thing, usually that means you're going to win MVP.
Yes.
Except Nikola Jokic averaged a 30-point triple-double, except he averaged it on the team that didn't win 50 games, and you know how I feel about 50 games.
Yes.
Where do you sit?
I think that you can't go wrong with your vote in this case. I do think this, and I think that this is a very important point. The danger in using precedent to explain your own vote is that precedent explains the consensus. Right?
Yeah.
But not necessarily every individual vote. So just because everybody did something all these times in history, how am I allowing that to influence what I believe to be the reason, right? There was somebody who didn't vote for the MVPs in all of those years. Do those people now have to go back and be like, I was wrong?
Right,
you know what
right,
I'm saying?
Right,
no,
right.
You just had a different opinion of how this goes. Now, my inclination this year is to look at Oklahoma City's record and look at the fact that while they seem to be very, very talented and have a lot of good players, they only got one the guy.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that one the guy has an advanced statistical profile also of note that says MVP.
Yep.
Right. He's got it.
Yep.
I would lean towards Shea in this case. I still think that Jokic is the best player in the NBA, but that doesn't always mean that you are the MVP.
Right.
So it's especially given how well Oklahoma City did last year, one loss record and then not get it, like. I think this year that it goes to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I think he's that dude. But I think it's so thin that I can't imagine standing up on something and arguing with somebody about it.
No, it is so weird. I feel much more confident about Shai Gilgeous-Alexander being MVP than I do about Oklahoma City as a staff, record label, and crew.
Yeah.
The same thing I said about Detroit, and clearly we're talking about franchises in completely different spaces, but follow me here. He's the one guy that can get a shot. That scares the living hell out of me in a playoff setting where you're looking at teams and you're saying, man, if they shut off this guy who's not a super athlete, who also relies on getting to the foul line,
bingo.
How is that going to work in games 4, 5, 6, and 7 when things really tighten up? Like you said, I'm not saying he's an 82-game player, not a 7-game player. I'm saying in the 82 games, he's had, like you said, an MVP type of year. I'm very, very curious how this is going to work out because you don't have another guy that you can say, hey, man, you're going to get me 30 tonight. Not you're going to wind up with 30, but you have to go get me 30, Jalen Williams. You have to go get me 30, Chet Holmgren. It's a difference between going and getting 30 and somebody asking you for 30. You can't ask anyone for 30 besides Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And that's
they're going to have to win by putting the clamps on people.
They got the dudes. They got the dudes to do it.
And they have the dudes. But that's what it seems from here it will take for them to be champions is they're going to have to guard their way to it. Now, what's going to be interesting with them is whoever they end up facing in the second round, yes. whether that be Denver or the Clippers. Now, against Denver, it becomes interesting because getting Hartenstein help, but I still wonder if they're too thin to mm-hmm. win mm-hmm. inside, right? Mm-hmm. But they are long. And so if you've got Hartenstein and you've got Chet, and you got Chet who can play perimeter and, you know, kind of swoop around and do all these things, hey, man, you got a chance against Jokic doing that. Like, we saw that early a couple years ago from the Lakers, if nothing else. We put Anthony Davis off of Jokic and then kind of have him roam what the next move is to try to take away some of the passes. Maybe they do that. But then if they have to go against the Clippers, and the Clippers have size, and the Clippers have two guys that can go get shots.
Three.
You're right.
Three. That's, man, Bo, I'm telling you, I wish we had more time because I wanted to get into the future of Kevin Durant, the future Ooh. Of all these quote-unquote big threes.
Oh, don't you worry, brother. We got the summer for Kevin Durant. Like, that's
true.
Right, say we could get back to him when nobody's playing basketball rather than just him.
Yes, that is true. Look, we I think the days of three max players are over. We didn't even really get into the Boston Celtics repeating or the Cleveland Cavaliers giving them a chance because we were spending so much time on all this other intriguing stuff. My man, I really appreciate you, bro.
Hey, dude, I appreciate you, man. Good word. It's always good to be able to join on, my brother. I appreciate you.
Hey, go check out Bomani Jones in the Right Time with Bomani Jones 3 times a week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Thanks to producer Dakota and the entire team that worked so hard behind the scenes on this show. I'll be back on Thursday, I believe, because there's no reason to do a show on Wednesday with the play-in stuff. So come check us out on Thursday. I'll have another guest on the next episode of The Good Word. Until then, everybody be safe.